Welcome back to Footsteps in the Attic. I am beyond excited to have today's guest because we're going to do a little toy talk today. But before I dive into it, I do have to give a shout out to my cousin Bobby, who recently had his birthday. And my guest today will appreciate what he did on his birthday. He spent the day building his Eternia playset. And my guest today would know all about Eternia and Motu and toys in general, because he helps run the toy department in Fairfield, Ohio, which is, I will say it again on the record, the best toy store I have ever been to in my life. They have everything you could possibly need, every single toy line. Please welcome back to the show my friend and friend of the show, Kenny Kepnick. Kenny, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing fantastic. I don't know that I'm worthy of such a build up, but I appreciate it, and I'm thrilled to be back.
No, everybody loves having you on. It's great. Every time I put the word out you're coming on, I get flooded with toy questions. And I mean, what is better to talk about in life than toys? Come on. I mean, you got to have some fun in life, right?
Absolutely. Just take us all back to our childhood and those things we love.
And the store and you have been very busy, because not only was the store at ZoloCon, which I attended and had a blast and actually bought some things from the toy department, but you also had the store's 6-year anniversary just recently, and you're going somewhere else this week. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we just celebrated our 6th anniversary as a store, which was incredible. I mean, the amount of people who came out, and you know, whether it was, there were literally people who came in and it was their first time in the store. They didn't even know anything was going on, which was wild. But you know, we had some sales, we gave away a bunch of toys like we do every year, and you know, just tried to sort of give back to the community that helps make us, you know, as great as we are. And it was a crazy weekend, but it was fantastic.
I mean, again, you can't not have a good time walking into the toy department. But where are you heading tomorrow?
Yeah, so we're actually, we just finished loading and we're going down to Lexington, Kentucky for Lexington Comic Con, which is one of our favorite shows. I've been going to it. I've been every year. I attended one year and I've been set up every year since. And the store, since we've been a store officially, has set up every year. So it's a great show. It's not run by like a corporation. It's not like one of the more corporate cons. It's still run by, you know, it's a small business, but it's a giant convention, you know, which is always nice too.
That's, I mean, phenomenal. And I mean, honestly, and I say this quite unbiasedly, but when the toy department sets up, I'm telling you, it's the best booth at any convention. They have such a variety. And what I love is it's all price points too. They have something for everybody. And I think that just shows the kind of care you put into your customer base.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, that, you know, we try to treat the show setup as like a microcosm of our store. And, you know, so we try to bring, again, yeah, like you said, the quality, the price points. It's funny, you know, you had mentioned going to ZoloCon, which I'd love to hear, you know, your feedback about. But one of the things that I didn't get to go personally because I had to work the store, but one of the things that Chris said about the show was the number of people that came up this time and were like, oh, you know, we follow you guys on social media, like, this is such great stuff, they were so excited to see us. And 100%. You know, for him to have even noticed it and relay it back was super flattering. And you know, the guys at that show, they put on a heck of an event. I mean, it was an incredible show. We can't wait to go back next time. ZoloCon, you know, whether it's the vintage stuff or the independent toys they brought, like, don't sleep on that show. If you're in the northeastern United States, you should head over there for sure.
Absolutely. My only regret is that I didn't attend sooner, because this has been happening a few years. That was my first one, and it was so much fun. And the toy department was right there. That was great. As soon as I walked in, I saw the booth. The funny thing is, I saw the figure set up, and I said, this has to be the toy department, because of the just the brilliant way it was displayed. And then I met Chris, bought some figures from the toy department, and it was just so much fun. And again, that was one of the busiest booths that I saw all day.
I love to hear that. It's, you know, it seemed by all accounts that people were thrilled to have us there, and you know, we were thrilled with the turnout and the returns for the weekend. And you know, I think it's going to be a show that's on our permanent schedule from now on. So hopefully, one of these times, I'll actually get to attend.
Yeah, we need Kenny to come.
I can come say hey.
Absolutely, my man. Yeah, we that has to happen. Yeah, you've got to come down, and you will add some things to your collection. I know. And it's funny because some of the people that asked some questions tonight were actually at ZoloCon too. I wish I had known that, but it's just funny. There's some fun questions tonight. I think you're going to enjoy it. We have 20 questions with Kenny. So I'll just throw it in. It's a mixed bag, Kenny. Some of them you may have been asked before, but Drew asks, why is the original Eternia playset so expensive? And what is the hardest playset to find, in your opinion?
So I would imagine that some of Eternia's expense comes from it was later in the line.
Yeah.
So a lot of times toy lines will reduce production. Right? Like everything has sort of peaks and valleys. And if a line is, you know, more or less popular, they'll make less of the stuff. So, I mean, I would imagine that Eternia's release and the timeline probably affects that a bit. I know there's some fragility issues with like the tracks. It's also big and it had a lot of parts, and whenever, you know, with most things vintage, the parts is where the price really stacks up. It's dragging down, yeah, all of the pieces and parts to make it complete. And that's, you know, by nature of that, it's gonna make it expensive too. As far as the hardest, I'm sure there are some obscure playsets. Like I know there's there's like an ice castle or something from, I want to say it's Black Star.
Right, that rings a bell.
Yeah, that's pretty tough. That we don't see often. You know, it's a hard balance though, right? Because Eternia and the USS flag are both expensive.
Oh yeah,
and big and hard to put together, but they're also popular. So, you know, I don't know, but, you know, I've seen way more of those than I've seen that Ice Palace, for instance.
Oh, yeah, no, I know. Now I'm going to look that up as soon as we're done, by the way. I got to see a picture of that Ice Palace because it's ringing a bell with me.
Yeah, I know we had a boxed one at PowerCon. It's like this big, like, sort of vertical rectangle blue box. Beautiful artwork, of course, like everything from the 80s had. You know, so, but, I mean, the iconic ones, you know, for the big and expensive and hard to find always end up being, you know, the flag and Eternia. Those are the Grail playsets as they were.
Right, right. And, you know, speaking of like the Motu theme, I'm interested in this question because I believe these were only released overseas. I could be wrong, but I will bend to your expertise. Is it Roe? I'm sorry. Zoe asks, can Kenny please explain Titus and Megator in the Motu line for me? I have everything but these two in my collection. And I will tell you, those two figures, ladies and gentlemen, are not cheap. So if you're looking for a Titus and Megator, you're going to pony up.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Like, I didn't even, you know, again, because I was born, for, you know, those who don't know, I was born in the late 80s. So
yeah,
a lot of that stuff had come and gone by the time I was growing up. And so I didn't even know those characters existed until, yeah, probably 8 to 10 years ago.
Right.
We were people were buying and selling the Masters of the Universe Classics line that Mattel did, and they did them in that release. So I hate to say that I actually don't know much of the story on them originally.
Right. I mean, they're big. I mean, these are big figures. I mean, I think they. If I could guesstimate, I think the price point is anywhere from like $2,000 to $3,000 per figure, especially if you find them boxed. I believe I might be wrong on that, but they're not cheap.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, when I hear things like that, that leads me to believe, you know, again, I don't know for sure, but I would assume that if it was an international release or maybe a late in the line release kind of thing.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, That might be a little bit obscure for my knowledge base.
Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, and they're obscure toys. So hope that helps a little bit, Zoe. Speaking of Z's, here's another Z. Zach asks, what are some of the best independent toy companies to keep an eye on? I get overwhelmed by the variety.
Oh, that's pretty fun. That's something I'm very passionate about. You know, at the end of the day, it kind of comes down to what you collect personally.
Right.
You know, there are people doing all types of toys, all types of scales and styles. You know, companies like Four Horsemen with their Mythic Legions line, yeah, or Zolocon, you know, they are a standard bearer for the independent toy line. They've been doing, you know, they're one of the longest, sort of biggest names in it. Boss Fight Studios is another one that's been around. They're celebrating their 10th anniversary. They deal primarily in 4-inch stuff, but they've expanded into, you know, some other scales and some licensed properties and things like that. They do Popeye figures and Sam and Max and stuff like that. I'm a big fan of a couple of up-and-coming toy lines. There's a company called Skeletron that's doing a modern take on the British version of G.I. Joe.
Ooh,
vehicle called the RoboSkull.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it is. I've seen the prototypes in person. It shows they're incredible. It's got a switchable cockpit, so it'll fit 4 or 6-inch figures. They've released a couple of the figures already. The vehicle's not here yet, but some of the figures are out, and they're incredible. And they partnered with a company called Grindstone Toys, which is doing an O-ring style line. And they released an O-ring style figure. And as soon as I got that in hand, I cannot wait to get their Kickstarter figures in hand. I could talk about that for an hour. There's Spiro, who does Animal Warriors of the Kingdom. Their Primal series is a 6-inch, Animal Warrior line that feels like it walked out of a cartoon that aired right after Gargoyles. Like, the style is so much fun, and they play so well. You know, those are some of my favorites. I feel like I'm leaving some other friends behind. You know, I could name drop 5 or 6 of them, but, you know, those, you know, Marauders, Gunrunners, they're incredible. They do, you know, 4-inch military figures. The 9 to 5 Warriors line that looks like it's a Food Fighters homage. Those look really cool.
That's awesome.
Heels and Faces, of course, which is doing Hasbro style wrestling figures for both Legends and Modern guys. I mean, that line's incredible.
That really is. I've seen a couple of those. That's like, I mean, everything that you mentioned is right on point. And like you said, it depends on what they're looking for and, you know, what they're into. So I know it's hard to quantify it in just a few companies.
Yeah, it's it is one of the greatest times to be a toy collector, because you have companies that are, you know, treating a lot of nostalgia properties correctly, which is great, but then you have so many new innovative ideas coming from some of these companies where, you know, people will walk up and see Boss Fight figures or Mythic Legions figures, and they'll be like, what show is this from? Like, is this, you know, they'll look at Mythic Legions, are these D&D, are these, it's like, no, like, you know, there's a couple of MOTU homages, but for the most part, they're original designs, and they're incredible figures, and it's, you know, it's awesome, because, it, you know, there's almost too much to keep up with. There are completely. So, you know, Ramen Toys is doing an A-Team style van, and they're doing like a 6-inch scale Dukes of Hazzard's car, you know, not officially, but like, you know, it's an orange, you know, you get it.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing some really wild stuff, you know, unlicensed, and there's a ton of great independent companies that are even getting licenses and play with it. So it's so exciting.
It is. It really is. I saw a lot of that again at Zolocon, which was really cool to see all those independent toy companies. And, you know, it takes a lot of guts, really, to be an independent toy maker, because, you know, you've got to mold these things. You've got to sculpt these things. You got to get them out to the general public, make people aware of them. And some of them, as you said, like Four Horsemen Studios, have done a masterful job at that. So it's very exciting time.
Yeah. And, you know, when you get to go to shows like, you know, PowerCon does it, Zolocon did it, Joe Fest is doing it, where you get these events that really try to bring together a lot of the independent toy companies, so you can go up and meet the people that are making your toys and that the ideas came from, and, you know, you get to see their passion, and, you know, a lot of times they're very gracious and excited. They're almost, sometimes they're more excited about the toys than you are, which is, it's almost contagious. It's awesome.
It's so true. No, it is. It's infectious because they're so passionate about it. It makes you very interested in it and what they're doing.
Yeah, it's really great. And, you know, it's outside of the corporate structure, which is always fun. And again, they get to do innovative things, both with ideas or articulation. And it's super fun. You know, I could nerd out about independent toys for an hour. And it's one of the exciting things at the store is that we're able to partner with a lot of these companies with, you know, with like a wholesale partnership, and we're able to carry the products and bring it so that people can see it in person. You know, there's a guy out of Texas he's got a 4-inch line called Dime Novel Legends, and they're cowboys.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they're 4-inch modern cowboy figures, and he does some homages, and then he does a lot of, you know, this is a cavalry from XYZ, and for the people that are super nerdy about it, it's great, but I look at it, I'm like, these are just super cool looking cowboy figures, like, you know, something that would probably never survive at mass retail, but
right.
These independent toy companies are able to work outside of the system and bring us incredible 3D art.
Oh, amen. I totally agree. And actually kind of staying on the topic of like making things that are outside the box, John had asked what your opinion is of mashups with toys. Like, for instance, when Ghostbusters, you know, Ghostbuster Ninja Turtles, you know, things like that. Do you like that when established toy lines go the mashup route? Or do you think that should be, you know, something that maybe doesn't occur as much?
I mean, it kind of all depends on how it's done. You know, yeah. I'm a Power Rangers fan, and Power Rangers did a crossover comic with Ninja Turtles, and they did Hasbro did some figures based off it, and I loved those figures. I thought they were awesome. You know, people are obsessed with those Turtles of Grayskull figures that are coming out right now. Other times I'm a little less, you know, like WWE's done some Ghostbusters and Turtles crossovers, and it's like,
and Masters of the Universe. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, you know, if it gets somebody, you know, maybe it's a gateway to somebody getting into Masters of the Universe that maybe only collects wrestling.
True.
Or
very true.
You know, it gets people to expand their horizons a little bit. And sometimes the designs just turn out super cool. So, you know, I try to keep an open mind to them and, you know, just sort of judge them based off if they're fun. You know, there's been some, like, you know, Ninja Turtles is crossing over with everything. There's like Stranger Things and Street Fighter and all of these different things. And it's like, all right, like, those don't all hit, but then the Turtles of Grayskull look super cool in person. So,
right.
You know, I guess you don't know till you try it if it's going to look awesome.
And if something is so bizarre and so out there, I usually want it. Like, if it's something so random and weird, that will appeal to me.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, so mashing things up like that, I guess, sometimes gets you the opportunity for those ideas to emerge. Actually, we were just nerding out at the store last week because they're going to reprint the old Amalgam comics in an omnibus.
Wow.
Amalgam was, it was incredible because it was like Batman mashed up with Wolverine. And
yeah.
Like, this is incredible. Like, you know, so, and if they came out tomorrow and were like, we're going to make figures based off the Amalgam comics, I'd flip a lid. I'd be all over them. So
I was just going to say, it wouldn't shock me if that occurs. That would be phenomenal. I
mean, the only shock would just be that now they're both owned by giant mega corporations, and you'd have to get that cooperation out of them.
But right.
Like, but I mean, listen, if there's ever a time where it's going to happen, let's do it now because I'm ready. I need them.
I'm right there with you, and I'm actually glad you mentioned Power Rangers earlier. This was a question that was later, but I'm going to fast forward to that one because you mentioned them. Rena asked, "What is the difference between Battle of the Planets, Power Rangers, and Voltron? Are they all in the same universe?" So Kenny is the most qualified to answer this question.
I you might be overselling my knowledge base here, but no, you know, they're not. They share heritage in that, you know, they're based on Japanese ideas and Japanese source material, but I don't even know that they've even crossed over.
Right.
As ripe as something like Voltron and Power Rangers would be for a crossover.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think we had an argument about it, not an argument, but a debate about it at one point about whether or not Power Rangers was ripping off Voltron. And I couldn't remember if the Super Sentai, which is the Japanese TV show that Saban edited together to make the Power Rangers TV show. Because there's like six or seven seasons of Sentai before what we know as Power Rangers, are like the diamonds on the suit and the dinosaurs and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think I want to say we determined that Voltron was still first.
Right.
But I can't remember exactly.
I think you're right. I think it went, because I have early memories when I was a kid. I actually remembered Battle of the Planets being on television, and then I think you're right. I think it was Voltron and then Power Rangers. I think that was
So Voltron definitely came before Power Rangers, because Power Rangers was 92 or 93.
Yeah.
I think it was 93.
Yeah.
But like Super Sentai, the way they do it is they take the footage from the Japanese show and then they film a bunch of American footage.
Right, right. And then okay, right.
Splice it all together in like a Frankenstein show. So what we know, I think it's Zayu Ranger is what they called the series over there. And it aired, I want to say it was like 5 or 6 years before they adapted it.
Wow.
For American audiences. Like, we've always been a couple of years behind, even with the modern stuff. So Super Sentai fans will be like, oh, they should adapt this season next because I loved the Megazords that they used over there. But, we've always been a couple of years behind them. So.
So there we go. Look at that.
Yeah.
That is why we have Kenny on, because he makes he provides some clarity in this vast toy universe. I have a question from Sarah, and I think you're going to like this question. Does Kenny own any Green Arrow knockoff toys? Now, this man has a large Green Arrow collection, for those who haven't listened before.
Yeah, I don't think I own any outright knockoffs. Own a couple customs, which were more handmade.
Yeah.
There was a company out of South America that makes these little PVC DC figurines. They made them back in like the 70s or 80s, and they're just solid color, almost like army men. And I'm chasing down a bunch of different colors of that. I think I have like seven. I know a guy who's got like 10 different colors. And so I'm still looking for a couple of those. And I don't know if they were actually licensed or not.
Right.
So that's probably the closest I have to a bootleg. But I think they were licensed.
But I'm telling you, this man, if you have a Green Arrow collection, you want Kenny to be your advisor, because I've seen it. He has quite an impressive Green Arrow and Zartan collection. It's a good problem to have, Kenny, trust me. Let's see, there was another question for you. Oh, here's a fun one for you. What toy did Kenny always want as a kid that he now owns?
Oh, that I now own.
Is there one that sticks out? Is there one that you didn't have, or maybe just that one that you wanted to reclaim that you had?
Again, being born in the late 80s and, being a kid when it was on, I loved Star Trek Next Generation.
Sure.
And, my sort of hot take for the episode is going to be that the Star Trek figures that were concurrent with the Star Wars figures of the era, being Power of the Force 2,
were
way better. I think the Playmates Trek line is super fun. I never had a bridge when I was a kid, and I did get a bridge a couple of years ago. So that would be the one I think that I actually tracked down.
Oh, that's perfect. See, now that's a nice full circle moment right there.
Yeah. Like it's just such a, like such an awesome playset. I had like the engineering playset and I had a shuttle, but I never had a bridge. So, I did end up tracking that down eventually.
Boom. You can double stamp done. Got that done. So that's awesome. One to cross off the list, Ken.
Right.
This is an interesting one, because I just learned about this recently. Christian asks if you can confirm that there was indeed a dinosaur playset released under the G.I. Joe brand. And I just learned about this myself. There is one. but I don't remember. I saw the box for it, but I don't know. I think it may have come out in the 90s around like Jurassic Park era.
Yeah, it was the Dino Hunters, and it was yeah, it was towards the end of the line, and awesome. And it should have kept going because G.I. Joe with dinosaurs sounds incredible.
I mean, but right?
The world wasn't ready for it yet.
I love it. I'm mad that I didn't know about this sooner because now I have something to add on my list because I'm starting to really get into the rediscover the Joe line again and getting my favorites. But that one is so out there. Again, like we were talking earlier, I think I need to have this.
Yeah, it's one of them that I'm always tempted by, but I have to like tell myself no because it's outside of my rules. But it is like, what would be better than G.I. Joe? And it's like, how about G.I. Joe with dinosaurs? That sounds incredible.
Very well said. I love that. How about G.I. Joe with dinosaurs? Then it gets better. Kane asks, why is Scareglow so expensive? That's in the Motu line for people who are not familiar who Scareglow is.
Yeah, he's an incredible character.
I agree.
Glow-in-the-dark skeleton man, which is awesome.
Yes, agreed.
You know, and thankfully gets a lot of love in current toy lines.
Right? Yeah, like
Mattel,
right?
Mattel did a reissue. Mondo has now done 3 figures, including a giant
I just saw that one. It looks incredible.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. I would assume that it's going to be similar to like a Scratch the Cat situation where he comes out, you know, probably came out later in the line and then is also super cool. Probably has a lot of crossover fans where you get people who just collect skeletons or, you know, sort of horror-ish looking characters and he kind of fits that bill. So you probably get some crossover demand, but he's just
so cool.
I just assume that's why. Yeah.
And I share your love for all things glow in the dark. So, I mean, come on, a figure that glows in the dark is automatically going to be desired.
Absolutely. So, circling back to ZoloCon, they had an exclusive through Mythic Legions where it was an homage to the old Warrior Beasts, like Skullman figure.
Yep.
And it's great. And it uses Mythic Legion parts. So it's this really high quality modern figure. But it activated this conversation amongst us at the store, which is, you know, Mythic Legions has 10 or 12 Motu homages in their line. And it's like, how have they not done Scareglow? Where is he? Because
right?
I need a glow in the dark Mythic Legion Scareglow.
Yes. I totally agree with you. And I have 2 original Skullmans, and I'm telling you, Scareglow in that vein would be amazing.
Yeah, yeah, I'd be all over it.
Speaking of ZoloCon, I'm glad you mentioned that. Elsa asks, I was at ZoloCon. I'm sorry I didn't see you, Elsa. I don't know who you are, but I'm sorry we missed each other. I saw that the toy department had a first shot Clark Kent superpowers figure. What does that mean? And we've talked about first shot figures before, but Kenny is the perfect guy to explain it.
Yeah, so you know, you have to make a mold to run the plastic through in the factory to make the toys. And to make sure that the mold works and that everything is accurate and what you want it to be before you run 2,000 to 10,000 figures through it, you have to do some test runs. And those figures that, you know, those test figures are highly sought after.
Yes.
You know, in the modern era, you know, factories are supposed to throw things away or the companies try to catalog the things. But back in the day, companies were much more flippant with that kind of stuff. They didn't really see any collectible value to it or, you know, because it hadn't been safety tested, maybe it was illegal for them to sell or whatever the case may be. So yeah, it's a, you know, it's a test run figure that they use as part of the pre-production process.
Exactly. And I was very fortunate enough to purchase a first shot figure from the toy department and I freaking love it. I have it in a special case and I'm just, every time I see it, I smile and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, that's a beautiful one to have if you're going to do it.
I mean, if you're a Ghostbusters fan, I was honored to now own a Ghostbusters First Shot Ecto Glow figure. And the toy department, by the way, has other First Shot figures, a beautiful display case as soon as you walk in. First Shot, they have prototypes. You got to check it out.
Yeah, and we, you know, like I said, we try to bring a sample of that around to the shows too. Both, you know, obviously we like to sell cool stuff, but also it's a good way to, you know, it's a good conversation starter. Like in this instance where someone sees something like that and they're like, "Whoa, what does that mean?"
Exactly? Maybe she'll now want to hunt that down. And if you want to hunt it down, you know where it is: the toy department.
Yeah, dangerous rabbit hole. So be ready.
Isla asks if the toy department is going to get any Frozen Empire toys, meaning the new Ghostbusters film.
Oh, sure. So I don't think a lot has been solicited. I know that I've seen figures for like the Kitty line.
Yes. The four pack.
Yeah. And by all accounts, the Plasma series, the 6-inch line, is dead.
Right.
You know, so there might be some role play stuff that's coming, but, you know, I'm sure we will see some of it eventually, just given the nature of buying toys and collections that come through. But, we don't generally do wholesale orders for Hasbro stuff. We kind of leave that for Walmart and Target, but I'm sure, you know, usually within, you know, 2 or 3 months of something coming out, we'll see a couple of them come through.
Well, that's the good thing about your store is you get what's important. You know, if there's a figure that, you know, stands out and you guys are excellent at picking out what collectors desire, you know, there'll be a representation of that in your store in some way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. We try. And, you know, we have a pretty beefy, Ghostbuster section up there, and we're always looking to add to it. So,
yeah, not to cut you off, it's actually stellar. If you're looking for Ghostbusters stuff, toy department has it. I mean, that was one of the most impressive Ghostbuster sections I've ever seen. So you've definitely got that covered.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's fun to see it ebb and flow too, because it's changed almost completely since you got to visit.
Now I have to go back and see it.
That's how it goes. Every time, you know, we're putting new stuff out every day. So every day you go different.
It's just like I dream of it. I'm going back. I'm definitely going back. this one, now this is interesting. I don't know if this is necessarily a toy question, but Joe says, can Kenny explain Captain Marvel and Shazam? Which one is DC? Like, why is one DC and the other Marvel? Like, I guess, what is the difference between these characters?
I mean, they're different. I mean, they're different characters who were, you know, created way back in the day, and it was just, you know, creative types were looser back then. If I remember correctly, Shazam was created by somebody maybe under a different company, like, was it like Charlton or something like that, which was then purchased by DC.
Okay, right.
And then Captain Marvel, like, so he was first as far as I know, and then like Captain Marvel as far as like the Kree soldier, you know, that's a Marvel thing. But Shazam as we know him, he started as Captain Marvel, which is how you get like Mary Marvel and the Marvel family and all that stuff. And then whether it's trademarks or brand confusion or whatever legalese, there was some weirdness where they've slowly started to try to shift the name over to Shazam and pretty much completely erase, even though Mary Marvel is still a thing and all of this. It's just a weird, you know, because there's a Marvel comics and it's in the name, but there's also a character called Marvel Man, which is, you know, like not a Marvel character, but he kind of looks like an Eternals. It's just confusing legalese.
A lot of gray area. Although I will say, I think the Shazam figure is my favorite in the Superpowers line. So I really, like, I have him front and center. I don't know, there's just something about that figure. Very, very cool. So
it's beautiful. It just pops. They really nailed the coloring and stuff on it.
No, they really did. They really did. And speaking of superpowers, and actually you and I talked about this specifically right before we went on the air, but it actually is a question. Blake asks if the Super Amigos Riddler counts as part of the superpowers line. And we actually talked about this before coming on the air, but I'll let Kenny give his take.
I mean, officially, no. It right. just depends on how hard the collector bug bites you.
Yes. Yes. And it's, yeah, and I know it's going to for me, but that's, I was telling Kenny I completed the line of superpowers before we went on the air. And so that Super Amigos Riddler, for those who are not aware, was an Argentinian, I believe they used the mold of the Green Lantern, right? So correct, it's, so, yeah. And they just put kind of like this cheap paint on it. And so it's very hard to acquire. And from what I understand, that paint rubs off fairly easily. Is that correct, Kenny?
Yeah, condition is a big problem with yeah. most of the South American releases from different toy lines. I mean, mentioning Super Amigos as a Crazy Green Arrow collector, I needed a Super Amigos Green Arrow carded, and the plastic that they use on those bubbles is so flimsy that, like, they're all cracked, and half the time the arrow's gone, even though the figure's,
oh, man.
The bubble's on the card, and
yeah,
the quality standards weren't quite there in the 80s in other countries.
This is very true. And speaking of, you know, people trying to fake things, Rhonda asks, if employees at the store are tested for knowledge, you know, I guess when you're hiring, and B, what are the most faked items that people have come to you with trying to sell? Now, that's kind of interesting. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like, you know, we're a small business, so there's not like, a traditional sort of corporate hiring process.
Yeah. I can tell you, by the way, they know what they're talking about, Rhonda. So they know what they're talking about.
we all have our specialties, and you know, we learn a lot on the job, and a lot of people's knowledge is known when they're hired, not outright tested, but just known because we generally have known all of the people we've hired,
right,
and we tend to double check each other. Even if it's something we're confident about, we like to get the second opinion just to make sure that we're not slipping up or missing something. The most counterfeited thing that people try to sell to us is probably a tie between Pokemon cards and Funko Pops.
Wow. That's interesting. I wouldn't think Funkos would be faked, but that would, make sense. I mean, because you can take them out of the box easily. People can tweak them and I guess so try.
It's not even like, you faking it to try to sell it to me. The problem is that there are factories in China
wow.
that are mass producing counterfeits and selling them on eBay, and eBay doesn't take them down. So
wow.
They'll have a $25 counterfeit of a $200 pop.
Oh, now see, this is really good to know. This is very valuable information for those who are listening. So you have to be careful on eBay.
That we've broken someone's heart because they've come in and they've been like, I've got this $350 ghost face pop from Scream, and it's like, I hate to tell you this, but it's not real. And they're like, well, I bought it at the flea market and the guy said it was real. And I'm like, listen, I don't know if the guy knew it was fake.
Right.
They're hard. I mean, a couple of them are so good that it's taken us 20 or 30 minutes of YouTube video comparisons and scrolling through pictures and stuff, because they're producing them at a factory. So it's not even like stuff's being 3D printed. It's being mass produced.
Wow. And I can tell people out there who are thinking about buying a particular line, like Star Wars with certain weapons, you want to go to the toy department because they do vigorous testing on these things. They know how to spot fakes. And like Kenny just said, some people are getting really, really good at counterfeiting. So if you want to go to a trusted merchant, again, I defer to the toy department, because they really do put the time in to make sure that what you're getting is the authentic piece.
Oh, thank you. And I mean, that's part of the debate we have, not the store, but like part of the debate the internet has in like Facebook groups and Reddit, when things like reproduction accessories come up, and, you know, a guy will be like, well, who cares if it's a reproduction? Like, it just looks nice in my collection. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, the problem isn't the first line for reproductions, right? It's not mm-hmm. the people that are buying it directly to put in their collection. The problem is when that collection goes to be sold, yeah. will the people that are selling it even know that there's reproductions in it? They, you know, right. someone's family might be selling an estate and have no That's idea. It.
That's right.
And, you know, they just see these pictures online that say, well, this is a, you know, this is a $120 Princess Leia figure. And it's like, well, it would be if this gun was real.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a $60 gun that's fake. So, like, you know, and so that's, you know, that's part of the ethical debate surrounding surrounding counterfeits is, you know, even with something like Pops, where it's like, yeah, like the people buying them on eBay to just put in their collection as a placeholder aren't doing anything wrong per se. But it's the, you know, it's if it gets sold at an auction or sold at a yard sale or winds up in a collection right. and then the person doesn't realize that it's fake, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I, as somebody who does collect, I really have a bug. I really like to get the original pieces. Like, I just spent $70 for a samurai sword for samurai in my superpowers collection because I didn't want a repop sword. I wanted yeah. to know that that was the original sword. You know, so, you know, and for reasons you just said, I don't know if at some point in the future I'll be incapacitated and somebody from my family might want to sell or hold that. And I want, you know, people, you know, I want to be a good care holder for these items. I want the original line. You understand this.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? And it's like, if I'm pro custom,
yeah,
you know, like I'm not necessarily pro reproduction, right? So it's like, right. if somebody wants to do, you know, maybe screen accurate Farm Boy Luke's, where the lightsaber doesn't come out of his arm like Wolverine, it, you know, they want to make a figure where he holds the lightsaber in his hand like some of the later figures do, like, that's cool. But if somebody wants to just run off, you know, factory knockoffs of a Luke Skywalker with a Wolverine style lightsaber, then, you know, that's gross.
Totally agree. I love that. Good way to put it. That's gross. Kenny, here's a question. What are I didn't get a name. I'm sorry. I don't know who sent this question, but what are some toy lines that are big over here that are non-existent in other countries? That's a hard one. I don't know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know.
I'm not super worldly. I haven't
Yeah, I wouldn't know. Yeah, I wouldn't know either. I don't know what, I mean, it's probably easier for the reverse. What, you know, but I couldn't think of anything that's, you know, big over here. That's not because, you know, I would think that most of our toy lines are acknowledged in other parts of the world.
Yeah. I mean, so America has been on the front lines of pop culture for, you know, probably the last 50 years.
Right.
You know, there are obviously, you know, tons of brilliant people all around the world making stuff, but like our stuff gets imported or exported more than, you know, we import other stuff, you know, Japan probably being the exception. And I would assume that like we're going to, you know, we would probably start talking about some Japanese toys that are, you know, especially when you get into some of the 80s mecha
yeah.
type stuff. That's like probably huge over there that didn't catch on here.
Right.
You know, like even just, you know, going back to the anecdotal Power Rangers example, you know, the handful of seasons before Power Rangers, you know, there are Japanese toys and they're just way less popular here because most American audiences never saw the source material.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. So I would think that would probably be the like, you know, there would be some shows like that over there that are giant. I know that's the case with anime, where every couple of years, American audiences like find an anime that's insanely popular in Japan. But as the internet gets more and more ubiquitous, it's harder and harder for things to stay obscure.
So true. So true. And I'm glad you see you use the right word, because this next question is all about obscure. And you're the guy that can answer this question. I think we've talked about this one before, but John asks if the store has ever sold a Wonder Bread He-Man. And I'd like you to explain what is a Wonder Bread He-Man.
Well, I would like Mattel to explain what a Wonder Bread He-Man is at this point.
Right?
It's been 40 years.
There's a lot of mystery behind that.
Yeah, so Wonder Bread He-Man or Savage He-Man is, you know, depending on where you are. I think the official term at this point is probably Savage He-Man, but he is a brown-haired He-Man that seemingly nobody quite knows where he came from.
Yeah.
He's real. He exists. He's not. Now, there are custom fakes out there.
Right.
But he is not completely a custom. But as far as we know, there are no packaged examples of him to be had.
Wow.
There's no internal record from Mattel where he came from. The theory for the longest time was that he was part of a Mattel partnership with Wonder Bread for like a mail-away figure. There's a theory that Mattel had a mail-away program where you could just, you know, you would mail away and they would send you a random figure. There are people that argue he's a factory error. There's people that argue that it was an attempt to make a Conan figure that never got off the ground.
Wow.
He's awesome. And it's funny now because Mattel acknowledges him because they've made three or four modern versions of him.
Wondar, right?
Yeah, it's right. Which fantastic. Is fantastic. And I think the classics one even came with a loaf of bread, which is adorable.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but, and yeah, we've had a handful of them come through over the years. We sold a couple graded ones. We've had a couple loose incomplete ones and a couple loose complete ones. It's one of those classics that you always want to have around. And, you know, whenever we do a show like PowerCon, we like to have one to take just because it's a, you know, kind of a key piece in the line.
So to my cousin Bobby, who collects Motu quite extensively, if you're looking, contact the toy department. So I'm just saying. I wouldn't even know how to authenticate. I guess you look at the paint and the date and there, I guess there's a whole slew of things you do to help authenticate something like that.
You can generally tell when something has been painted.
Yeah.
You know, you can do comparisons and you can tell hand painted versus factory paint, and you know, there's plastic differences and stuff. And listen, there might be a world at some point where someone's able to dial everything in exactly at a factory and mass reproduce them, and they'll be, you know, you can't tell them apart, but as of right now, you know, we can tell them apart, and that's what matters.
I love it, man. No, I love it. I've yet to see one in person, so I'd be very excited to see that one day, and it will probably be at the toy department. I'm just saying. Mike asks, does Kenny have any toys for investment purposes only? That's kind of interesting. Do you own
any? Yeah, that's an interesting one. I'm trying to think.
Yeah, I don't, because I think a lot of toy collectors like myself, like you, we collect what brings us joy. We collect what we like. And if, you know, in the process of that, if we find one that tends to be of some value and we can add it to our collection and we have the means, we do so.
Yeah, there's been a couple pieces over the years that have come out where I'm like, I'm gonna pick this up because I think it's gonna be popular, and I might be able to, you know, I'm gonna buy one for me and I might be able to, you know, resell one later to help pay for something else. Or
yeah,
But there's not anything that I'm really holding on to that I can think of right now that's like, this is going to be worth money. That's why I have it.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, collecting is such a, you know, nostalgia is an emotion, and collecting is nostalgia based. So
sure is.
Yeah. I mean, I probably make a lot of financially irresponsible decisions collecting instead of.
We all do, my friend. We all do.
Right.
Anybody who's into the toy collecting world understands what Kenny just said, and we all share that same financial, you know, burden on occasion. But does it really compare to that feeling when we walk down and we get those tingles when we were a kid, and you can't buy that? That is just priceless to me, looking at those things, and we get that feeling.
Absolutely.
You know, and then those of us who have the disease, we wouldn't have it any other way.
Exactly.
You know, Kenny, it's amazing how quickly time flies when we have you on, and it's been 50 minutes already, and I always feel like, but there's like 1,000 more questions we could ask Kenny. But the funny thing is, the very last email I got wasn't even a question. It was a statement. Jason says, please thank Kenny wholeheartedly for his constant information. I always enjoy when he's on the show. And I thought that was the perfect one to just lay out at the end, because it really is appreciated. I think I get so many emails after you come on about how you've educated people, and like you always send out warnings for certain things, like you did with the Funko Pops. So thank you for what you do and for always educating the audience.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm beyond flattered. I like talking toys, and it's always a joy to be on here. And so I'm just happy that people enjoy it enough to listen to me ramble.
Absolutely, my man. And I know you have a trip to go on tomorrow, but of course I can't wrap this up without asking you if you would kindly come back so we can do another Q&A with Kenny soon.
Of course. Yeah, just let me know. We'll make it happen. It's always a good time.
Oh man, it is beyond. These are always the most fun. And again, for those of you looking, hit up Kenny at the toy department. You will not be disappointed. Make sure you get to Fairfield, Ohio. Check the store out. Check the booth out. Any show they're at, believe me, if you see the toy department, go check it out. It's unbelievable. Kenny, I want to thank you once again. It's been a pleasure. And if you wouldn't mind, I'm just going to have you hold on so I could thank you off air. But thank you so much for doing this.
Absolutely. Thank you, and I hope to be back.
Absolutely, you will. But for those of you who had some toy questions that we just didn't have time to get answered, believe me, resend me some emails. I'll collect them so Kenny will be fresh with questions when he comes back. But until then, this is Brian Hobson for Kenny Kepnick. We'll see you next week.